everybody, it happened. We have had technical difficulties, and we actually lost a portion of the recording for this episode. Now, we've been able to salvage it by the fact that we had multiple microphones in the room, but it is not up to our usual sound quality goals. It is still listenable, I promise you. And we especially wanted to keep it because Bryce just had some great insights regarding creativity. So we do hope you enjoy it, but if it sounds weird in your ears, it's not just you. And we have it figured out already for the next time. And Lord willing, this won't happen again. But please enjoy our discussion of our core value here at Antioch on creativity.
Welcome to the Life in the City podcast from Antioch Community Church in Northeast Minneapolis, where we explore what it looks like to be a loving family inviting all people into the life-changing way of Jesus Christ. We're glad you're here.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Life in the City podcast from Antioch Community Church. I'm Coley Wanja.
And I'm Rachel Love.
And we are back again with pastoral resident Bryce Langley.
They let me back on.
Yeah.
It's partly his job, but one of his jobs. Anyway.
One of many. Chief cook and bottle washer.
Yeah, last week we talked about how all the hats you wear. So This now is podcast co-host, I think, is another one.
Yeah, out of like the 20.
Yeah. Well, you guys, how was your weekend? Anything fun or interesting happen?
No, and I kind of was really excited about that. I'm not going to lie. What about you, Coley?
Well, Sunday was full. I was able to fill in for kids' church. I didn't have to teach, but I was just like the second person in there. Mm-hmm. And Sam Schreiner, shout out to Sam Schreiner, one of our community group leaders and amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Amazing teacher to kindergarten to second grade. And they are all boys minus one. One little girl.
Oh, man.
I won't shout out names because I haven't talked to any of the parents for permission. But so adorable and just a riot. And yeah. Second grade boys are just hilarious.
You can't unhear what second grade boys say. Oh, it sticks with you.
Having been one, I can say this is true.
they're just a riot. But so we have a system here at Antioch where the teachers rotate, so they don't miss church every Sunday because we only have one service. And so Sam was asking them, like, hey, what did you guys talk about last week? And we use this program, this curriculum called the Gospel Project, and it's incredible.
Yes.
It's I think it's produced by Lifeway, but the whole point is that every single Sunday points back to Jesus, but you go through the entire Bible and you go through it chronologically over the course of 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it's awesome. So he was asking, there's this big timeline on the wall. I'm like, hey, okay, so we're here today. Tell me about last week. I wasn't your teacher. What did we cover? And one of the boys raises their hand all confidently. Cause what Sam asked was, what's in this picture? There was something very bright gold on a cart. And it had angels with wings and there were poles. Maybe you know what you're picturing right now.
Yes.
And so Sam asked, he said, what is this? And one of the boys raises his hand. He goes, oh, I know. That's the Ark of the President. And Sam, in all of his parental and teacher wisdom, just goes, it is the Ark of the Covenant. Yeah. And it represents God's presence.
Let's get to way to go, Sam.
The Ark of the Covenant and God's presence as the Ark of the President.
I love how kids can just like hear certain things and stick with it. I think there was one time years back where I was teaching like a toddler or like preschool class. And we were talking about how God used ravens to send food to, I think it was Elisha. And I remember at the end, a parent picking up their kid and saying, so what did Miss Rachel teach you today? And he was like, God fed Elisha raisins. And I was like, oh, okay, ravens, raisins, like God fed Elisha. That's great. Wonderful.
You know what? I actually have a question of, like, in that curriculum, and maybe this is going to come out of the wash a little bit. Like, okay, I grew up watching VeggieTales. So oh, yeah. I'm assuming, like, yes. Everybody else did. So I remember being a new Christian, and I had seen David and the Giant Pickle, right? This is David and Goliath.
Yes.
And so you know, obviously, like, you know, oh, gets hit in the head with a stone, you know, big pickle falls over. Until I actually went and read 1 Samuel 15, 16, and 17, and it's like, he decapitates him? And I think to myself, how would we retcon this and, like, put that in VeggieTales? Does it, like, cut to Martha Stewart, like, julienning a pickle? Like, it's like, I kind of wonder how in the Lifeway curriculum they're going to go through, like, Nadab and Abihu putting the mark on an ox cart.
Yeah,
yeah. He's like a sandwich spear now. He's not a full pickle anymore. Like a deli stacker.
Oh, you're all right.
Oh, my word. That surprised me. That was hilarious. Oh, yeah, he's just a condiment at Uncle Frankie's now.
And if you talk about big battles, I mean, they just turn them into relish at that point, so.
Oh, my gosh. And they relished in it.
Air horn!
Oh, man. We need one anti-awkward moment every week.
Yeah. Yes. Sometimes we have multiple. I'm not going to lie. Yeah.
Actually, it's funny that you say that, though, because the previous week, it was the story of the Ark of the Covenant when the Philistines had it.
Yep.
And they sent it to every city, and every city kept getting boils and sickness and all this stuff. And they were like, just send it back, send it back. And that was, they celebrated its return on a cart of oxen that wasn't being led by anyone.
Yep.
But that was the Ark of the Covenant, not the Ark of the Present.
I'm just picturing, like, Air Force One now, like, with gold wings, like, flying through the air.
Somehow, like, make this a meme and put it on the Instagram page.
Ark of the President. Someone will think it's actually a political post, so.
Oh, yeah, actually, let's not do that.
The things our kids come up with. I love it.
Yes.
Well, shout out to you and Sam Schreiner for, like, rolling with that and just propelling forward with what the Ark of the Covenant is.
Quick on his feet, that's for sure.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, Bryce, you're here again.
Yes, I am here again.
Last week, we talked about one of our core values, which was community, living an organic community as a church. But this week, we wanted to talk about creativity, another one of our core values. But what made you were all about, like, yes, I want to be a part of this conversation.
Yes, I did.
Why? Why did creativity kind of spark some joy, to quote Marie Kondo, in your life to talk about?
That's a good quote. I like that one. You know, it's interesting because I'm not, you know, obviously Lane Swanson, which shout out to her for her artwork. We're going to be plugging one of her next shows coming up. So stay tuned at the end. We're going to be doing that. And I obviously don't lead worship because I'm about as musically inclined as a rock.
Although, I mean, speaking of rock, if you were to lead worship, you would have probably the most epic metal worship set.
Oh, there'd be breakdowns, there'd be mosh pits. I mean, it would be, go to a Christian metal show and experience it. It's fun.
The closest I've gotten, and this is probably not metal at all, but I remember in college one time, I went to a Skillet concert.
Oh, their early albums go hard enough where I'd say that actually counts.
I made the mistake of being, like, in the front row, though, and the lead singer, I mean, he was so involved with his music, and every time he would, like, shake his head forward, like, sweat would, like, come off of his hair, and I remember at multiple points, like, just getting his sweat in my face as he, like, shook his head, and I was like, nope, didn't sign up for this. This is disgusting. And that's the closest I've ever been to any kind of hardcore Christian music. So
So that's not really a reason that I'm on.
Metal music was gonna come up,
so you were just trying to get it out of the way.
I ripped the band-aid early.
But I think even actually, like, being a member and a participant in that scene for as long as I have been, and thinking about Christians participating in it, and then thinking a lot about the church existing embodied in a host culture that has its own artistic sensibilities, its own principles for what makes good art, or how do we express creativity, how do we embody it. This is just one of those passion areas that I think maybe needs some renovation in American Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we're going to get into that a little bit more. But that's the beat line for why I really wanted to be in on this, because I love that Antioch's committed to it.
That's awesome. I love it. And just a reminder for anybody that maybe hasn't listened, go back and listen to the one about truth where we talked at the beginning of it. We talked a lot about what core values are. Mm-hmm. Core values are not the same as like our statement of faith.
Mm-hmm.
They are not necessarily like each a moral judgment that, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't have this core value, you're not a real church. They are more like personality. And they're unique to Antioch. No, we purposely put truth and pursuing God in the list because we think it's essential. But other churches are going to have that expressed in a different way. But this one is a great example of how we put community in our list because of who we are as a church.
Yeah.
Not because we think every church should have the stated core value of creativity.
Right.
There's going to be ways churches are creative, but it's unique to Antioch. It's not saying it's like a moral judgment that every church should have it be the same level of priority.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So with that in mind, let me read the core value and then we can talk about it. We have been created in the image of God. As followers of Jesus, we are part of God's cosmic work of redemption and new creation. We desire that our community be an expression of the creative work of redemption God is doing within and among us. Our goal is to utilize the diverse gifts and abilities God has given us to creatively engage people and culture with the gospel. So, this is definitely a broader definition of creativity than we might originally think. So how you define creativity in the biblical sense or in this kind of context?
Yeah, there is a Instagram account called Sword and Pencil. I don't know. Yeah, either you're familiar with it, maybe somebody who's listening to this might be. But this is
a Sword?
Yes.
Okay.
Sword. So this is a graphic designer who lives in, I believe, Toronto, is a believer, and does a lot of like kind of American traditional, you know, flash art type things. Mm-hmm. And there was a post that he had on there one day, and it was these kind of, you know, thin line drawings of a bunch of hands that were holding like a baby bottle, a microphone, there were several other things. I think one of them was like a whisk or spatula, and underneath it, it said, all of it is worship.
Mm.
Oh yeah, and also barber clippers
were
on there as well.
That spoke to you?
Yeah, that spoke to me because, you know, shout out to Alex at Elizabeth's Barbershop in St. Paul. So
this is an audio podcast, but Bryce has an incredible beard.
Although I will say I was mistaken for John Cooper by one of Emily's home church's youth group kids.
Hilarious.
Which I'm like, thank you.
For those who don't know, who is John Cooper?
John Cooper's lead singer Skillet.
Yeah.
So thinking about Rachel getting a spit, I am prepared to his beard. So
that's hilarious.
So yeah, I think what's more dynamic about the biblical definition of creativity is that we're not just talking about somebody who's got a really thin wax mustache, studied in Paris under Monet and wears a beret, or who is necessarily like, you know, putting up a pop-up shop at Art of World.
Mm-hmm.
But that is something that we're involved in. We'll probably get into that in a few minutes. But I think because God created the world with a particular intentionality, that he wasn't doing this just out of a utilitarian necessity. Like, it's just bland. It's put up for the sake of, you know, being a structure that exists to serve something else. He did so with vibrancy, with color, with all of this kind of wonder, which is why you and I can go to, like, you know, Rocky Mountain National Park, or even up at Voyager in northern Minnesota, we can look out at Gooseberry Falls and say, oh my goodness, like, God is so much the best artist that I could ever envision or imagine. So in thinking about culture making, about cultivating, think a lot about, you know, families and the way that they're creating a culture, mm-hmm. their own personalities, their own ways of doing things, of raising kids and setting an atmosphere that is growing and developing little kids and even growing and developing their marriages. But for those of you who are single, have roommates, you're doing the exact same thing.
For sure.
College students listening to this, you're doing that on your dorm floors.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it's creativity really in its best form, it fosters community.
Yes.
And that's actually one of the reasons that it is in our list is because we are located One of the reasons it's in our core value list is because we're located in Northeast Minneapolis, aka the Arts District of Minneapolis. And we also have creative people, but we knew that is going to be an important element of our mission here.
Right.
And if we just overlook that, we're going to be missing something.
Yeah.
But we also can come to that host culture, as the term you like to use. I know it's not original to you, but...
Yeah. It's not original to me. I never would coin it myself. So.
But to say, yeah, creativity is art, but it's so much more than that.
Yeah.
So in what ways do you feel like our culture, the world that we are in, misses the mark on what God intends for creativity?
Yeah, the term host culture I've heard from people like Mark Sayers and Jean-Marc Comer, who are two pastoral figures, respectively, in Australia and then in Portland, who talk a lot about the interaction between the American church to the host culture, which has its own set of values, its own morals, its own compass and direction and vision for what that's all pointing towards, you know, artistically. So... there's a really good podcast that I'm going to recommend from a guy named Jordan Cooper, who is a Lutheran minister, hosts a show called the Just End Sinner podcast. I don't know, maybe we can put it in the show notes. And one of the things that he talked about in a Q&A is that if you study art from pre-1960 to post-1960, so this is from basically modern to postmodern art, a lot of the modern artists, so especially we think of Picasso, in his paintings, he was looking for something transcendent. And even in the way that he talks about his art and what he was pursuing, he was looking for something way bigger than himself. And then in the 1960s, especially you can look in the American locale with the sexual revolution and a lot of philosophical changes, art became not something that was actually looking for the transcendent or for something higher, or searching for truth. It became basically deconstructing, ripping apart for the sake of doing so. It became a provocateur project. So, you know, reading the Bible, there's a lot of things that we could pull out of the Old Testament in particular, like you read Judges, or you read Ecclesiastes, or even parts of like Ezekiel or Isaiah, that if HBO syndicated it, it would be in the censors.
Yeah, for sure.
And yet, that's not the point of the authors. They're not coming from this deconstructing postmodern sensibility to just say, let's just put this out there to be as edgy as we possibly can. Those are all unfortunate circumstances that are illustrative of something way bigger going on in the project of reconciliation, which is going to include darkness. It's right. going to include violence. It's going to include rivalry. So it's the idea of a composer, you know, using minor keys and dark chords to write a concerto sort of thing. So I think that's something that the host culture is committed to doing, that I think the church, though it shouldn't necessarily just shy away from, you know, exploring the darker, heavier themes of, you know, being human and discipleship, etc.
Absolutely.
It needs to be put in the context of we're looking to something higher, bigger, greater, and better than us that outshines the darkness.
Right. You know, one thing that we have to recognize is, like, you've said this a little bit, is our place in it, that God is the creator. And we also can create. But we are never creating something out of nothing. We are taking other things and creating stuff.
Yeah.
Making stuff. And one of the ways that I think people who don't know Christ sometimes try to create through deconstruction, it's like trying to create nothing out of something. And in that way, this backwards way of like, I want to be God. But I can't.
Exactly.
So instead I'm just going to destroy and say, look, I did a thing.
Which is, it's taking the indictment that's levied against Adam and Eve in Genesis 3 and sort of running it out to the end of its tether.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Maybe this would be the good spot for Genesis 1, because that's one of the passages that's a part of our core value. So this is Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. Then God said, Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them.
So how does that speak to creativity?
You know, I think about, there's a memory that I had in college. I was a part of InterVarsity Christian Fellowship at Winona State University. And we had a pastor from a local Bible church that was unaffiliated with the EFCA. He was doing kind of our large group lecture. And I remember he said something to the effect of, you know, does it ever occur to you that, like, God actually has a sense of humor? Mm-hmm. Like, look at the duck-billed platypus. Or the way that an ostrich sticks its head in the sand and looks like a dingus. Or bacon. Right? And I really chuckled. Because it never occurred to me that it's like, God is so much more dynamic of a God. Because I think about especially how Yahweh was set apart from the polytheistic pagan nations that Israel was living amongst, against, and supposed to be set apart from. Mm-hmm. Because those pagan gods were, you know, telling them creation stories about how you're all cosmic accidents. You're basically fallout from this war that we're having in the heavenlies. And we don't have any other purpose but for you to basically serve us on our terms, and we'll punish you if you don't. Mm-hmm. And yet, our God, Yahweh, the one true God, said, I'm not going to create out of conflict. I'm going to create what we say in our EFCA doctrine, ex nihilo, which means out of nothing. It necessarily means there was a creative, deliberate intention behind what he put together. Mm-hmm. Because he wasn't interested in just creating subjects that were going to bow to him and worship him out of a fearful, you know, contrived, forced sort of slavery. Mm-hmm. So I think that those two verses right there are actually part of what sets Christianity in contrast to other philosophies that say we're just kind of here a little bit on accident. There's not a whole lot of meaning and purpose, because God created us with purpose because he did so intentionally.
Yeah, no, that's really great. And I think as believers, made in the image of God with intention, our goal is to then, or our mission is to then also be part of God's big story of redemption. Mm-hmm. And we can do that creatively.
Yeah.
We can express it creatively through art and music and images and whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think we see in scripture that you also can be creative and be a part of that missional work of new creation that is coming in an infinite number of ways.
Right.
Whether you see like the spiritual gifts, mm-hmm. that are listed, that are, none of them are art. You know?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, what would you say to somebody who's like, well, I don't paint, I don't draw, I'm not even like creative in the kitchen, but how could I express creativity in the church for the betterment of the church and for the betterment of the created world that we live in? How could I do that if I'm not quote unquote creative as the typical world would define it?
Right. Yeah, I think one of the operating principles that I have with that is that if somebody sat me down and asked me that, I would naturally ask about their personality, the things that they're good at, that they like, that it's not something forced.
Yeah.
Like, what mm-hmm. do you just naturally do? What makes you tick? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of answers, obviously, that people are going to give based on their lived experiences, the things that they just enjoy doing. And I would say those don't have to be mutually exclusive to God's will for your creative expression and outlet. I would actually say they're an act of worship is to lean into them, because it's God who is the giver of those gifts.
Absolutely.
So if you're in a board gaming guild, you do, you know, rec league sports, I think about Joel, you grow a garden. Jana Hub, who is like a Jedi master at home renovation.
Yes, she is.
So there's all of those different things. And this is honestly something I really love about Emily, is that she has such an eye for like interior decorating and making a space very intentionally beautiful. And also she's like the best cook in the world. Mm-hmm. And I know being in Northeast Minneapolis, we're spoiled with super good coffee. So shout out to Dogwood.
Bryce literally came into this podcast recording studio, aka one of our offices here at Antioch, with an espresso from Dogwood. So that's why he may sound a little amped this morning.
I'm just amped all the time.
That's true. So. Can't stop, won't stop.
Exactly. So I think that's where I would maybe encourage people to actually begin thinking of creative expression, is that it doesn't automatically think about, like, you know, well, film, you know, print art, digital art. It's, what do I naturally just love to do? What do I love being a part of? And how do I invite other people into that? God at the center of it all, Jesus compelling me.
And two, another question you could consider is, how can I use my gifts and abilities, interests, skills, pick a verb, or
noun.
Pick a noun. how can I use those for the good, or for the goal of, like, creating wholeness? So I am so in awe of people who can work with numbers. Mm-hmm. Like, I am not a numbers person. They just carry no meaning for me. I don't retain them. It's not that I'm just bad at math. It's like, I don't remember numbers at all. I screwed up my own birthday in high school. I mean, like, it's not, it just means nothing. So when people are able to extrapolate data and bring meaning to it, and then make decisions that are for the common good from it, it's incredible to me. Or, you know, we have people that are, you know, data analysts or math teachers or web designers or like, and most of them I don't think would say, like, oh, well, I do all of this as an act of worship. But I really think it is, and it can be, especially when I see how good they are at it and how much joy they get out of it. That when we do things that bring joy to other people, or even just bring joy out of us, that is worship. When rightly appreciated, you know. And so actually I'll put a shout out here. We would love to hear stories from you guys too. We would love to interview people of, like, how are you using your gifts and abilities in your workplace or your home, wherever you spend your day, for the glory of God, in creative ways that that are not maybe the typical or the stereotypical, like, artsy kind of ways. We would love to hear that and celebrate that, because I think there's just a million ways that that God is using his people.
And I would say for all nerds, calling all nerds, either in this room or listening to the podcast, I've personally found Martin Luther's work on vocation to be a really good, rich theological treatise on this idea of what you do is all worship, and it has a creative element to it because we worship a God who is a creator. So I'd actually be curious to hear maybe from the two of you, because I really think of parenthood as one of the ultimate creative outlets.
Whoa.
Because everybody is so unique in the way that they raise their kids, developing their personality. So how have you seen that play out in the way that you're raising kids, especially young kids?
Yeah, so just for context, we are both first-time parents, birth parents.
Yeah.
I have a 19-year-old stepson, Gavin, and a 2.5-year-old son, Dax, and Virgil.
Yeah, I have a 6-month-old named Abigail. And she
I've got a 2-year-old black lab named Rory. So
dog dad.
Yeah. Oh, please tell me you have a mug somewhere in your home that says dog dad.
Not yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah, John, it's coming.
John, my husband, doesn't even let us, like, reference him as dad if we're talking to Winston. Like, no, I'm dad to Dax and I'm dad to Gavin. I am John to the dog. yeah, no, that's a really good question, because, I mean, I grew up working with kids at Camp Chaminade, and also working around and through a lot of creative things, working creatively. But, man, as a parent, the creativity, there's a mixture of, I think, preparation and, like, spontaneity. So there's a lot of stuff that you want to prepare for, and maybe I'm not wired this way, Rachel probably a little bit more, but I didn't read a single parenting book.
No.
That's exhausting to me, just the thought of it. But I will sometimes think through, like, oh man, today was rough, and it was because I wasn't prepared. We got to come up with some creative ways to wear out Dax, because it's tough to wear him out. So how are we going to do that today? Then there's other times where it's like, well, on the fly, we're going to do this, and that's how we're going to spend our day. Mm-hmm. One thing that I try to do to not lose my mind, because when you have a 2.5-year-old, losing your mind is a genuine possibility, is to see, this is going to sound kind of corny, and I really don't mean it that way, but to really try and see how Jesus sees these situations. So there's times when Dax is full of joy and I am just so irritated because all he's doing is getting us off track of whatever my track was.
Yeah.
But when I zoom out and see Dax the way Christ sees him, it's a lot easier to join in on the play, to join in on the fun or the silly, and not just be like, we gotta get this done, or I want to grow up.
Right.
You know, or whatever.
Yeah.
And same with Gavin, too. I mean, now he's an adult, but he lives with us. But, you know, parenting an adult child is a whole other thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to do it with love and grace and patience and recognizing, like, we're not perfect.
Right.
And to let Gavin become his own person, too. He is his own person. Mm-hmm. It's a very different, you use very different tools with each kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, very different language and muscles. And yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's probably very different for me, and I'm still learning about what parenthood is and what it can be, and learning to love the journey that we're in, especially now as Abigail is like teething and probably breaking down, crying in the next room over. You know, I came off of 10 years of teaching in classrooms and then came into parenthood, and there's nothing more humbling than realizing, yep, education, like, gave me no context on what parenthood actually would be. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing that I'm realizing in parenthood is that she's at this age now where she's just curious about the world around her. Like, we can't bring her to a restaurant without her wanting to lean over into the booth behind us and, like, just see what's over there and who's over there. And trying to tap into this idea that, like, curiosity is a good thing, and curiosity about the world around us. We want to learn things. And so it's come to, even as Joel and I are on walks with her in her stroller, pointing out and talking about the things that we see around us and pointing out nature and what God's created. And wow, look at those green leaves on that tree. They're so vibrant. And right now, that, I mean, that's kind of a dual fold thing, as we want to give her vocabulary to describe the world around her. But also, you know, identifying the things around her that she can see that God has created. And even as she's learning things like how to eat, like, some foods right now, she's got to learn how to use a spoon. And that's a struggle to see sometimes. And it's very painful to watch.
Yes.
But, you know, she's learning how to use tools purposefully. And I think that's one thing that as she's learning, I can see, like, okay, it's good to see the struggle. The struggle is good. We often remind ourselves, but also, how can we build this identity in her that, like, we use things for a purpose in our world. And as she gets older, using our skills, our gifts, our abilities, and the things around us to better ourselves, others, and to have a vocabulary to describe what we see and how it can be used in the world is one way that I see creativity coming into play already in parenthood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good. Appreciate both your answers.
But it's also that, how can we creatively as parents engage the world around us with our kids?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that my world has now become my kid.
Yeah.
Kids.
Yes.
It's that now, okay, is my primary mission field my family, and my primary responsibilities to my home, the people within my house? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that I'm no longer caring for, you know, I no longer have to love my neighbor as myself.
Right.
You know, that's still part of the call. And so how do we, it actually requires more creativity. Yeah. Because frankly, it was easier to do that when I was single. Mm. And then it was easier to do it when we were just married with one kid. Mm. And then it was easier to do it when, you know, like it's, yeah. It gets harder and harder. Mm. But it gets harder because you have to be more creative.
Right.
And that's one thing you've encouraged me in parenting, Coley, is, you know, reminding me, you said to me at one point, we have tried to be very intentional on bringing Dax with us to things like grocery distribution preparation on Monday evenings. And I've seen you bring him in his jammies even, right? And he's running around and he's carrying cans and doing different things with
Brown. Riding his bike, just ripping around.
But he sees mom, dad, the community group that is like family to him, serving others. And he can be a part of that. And that's allowing him to creatively see what community looks like around him. And you said this at one point, you're like, even all those things that we do and try to be intentional, like he still thinks he's the center of the world, right? And so it is a process over time of allowing him to see how gift skills can be used by community to better others. And kids developmentally just don't understand that, but building it into your family culture and rhythms is important too.
Yeah.
And that sort of leads into then, like, one of the reasons that we have this as a core value, I said this earlier, is yes, because of the community that we're in and the arts district, and
right.
That's the artistic, artsy, quote unquote, side of it. But there's also this piece of demonstrating the heart of God in our church and community. Uh-huh. That is creativity. We've already said, you know, God is the ultimate creator, and we get to be a part of that. I think one great example of this kind of played out, there's tons of examples of Jesus doing things mm-hmm. in an unexpected way, which I think is a creative way. Mm-hmm. Every time Jesus tells a parable, he tells a story instead of a platitude,
yeah.
or instead of just a statement, he tells it through a story.
Yeah.
Makes people have to dig and look and think harder. And
which there's actually, you know, points in the Gospels in particular where part of the narrative arc is that there's people who don't understand, who misinterpret or completely kind of like the punchline in the parables, and it's an indictment against them. But again, they're sort of dense to the fact that Jesus is employing a certain kind of storytelling mechanism.
It's also an argument for why not to read what you're saying is an argument for why we can't read the Bible as postmodernists.
Yep.
That no, Jesus and all of the writers had an intent.
Yep.
They did. There was a goal with a message. There was something they wanted to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not up to me as the reader to decide what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that general trend is sort of falling apart because authors like want to have their point across and not just be in the hands of the receiver or artists. And it doesn't mean you can't. I'm going to not let myself go on a tangent. I'll cut that. But, but another example that you see is the way Paul shares the gospel.
Yes.
9 times out of 10, when he goes into a city, he goes first to the synagogues and talks to the Jewish people and argues for debates with them for why Jesus is the Messiah you guys have been waiting for. But in Acts 17, it's just this incredible passage where he goes to Athens.
Yep, so this is...
Yeah, he goes to Athens. And there's at least, there's not, maybe not a prominent synagogue, or it's not where we hear about him going, at least not in this passage. And as he's walking around, Athens is like the hub of all of these different pagan worship sites.
Yep.
And he's walking around and he sees all of these temples and altars to all of these different gods. And in light of what he sees in the culture, he changes the way that he delivers the message.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, unfortunately, I'll let you guys go back and read it. I highly recommend you go read it, Acts 17. He has to even back up. With the Jews, he is able to say, like, the word God, and you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he says Messiah, and you know what I mean. Here with the pagan worshipers and the Stoics and that kind of thing, he has to back up and explain, like, okay, there's this God.
Yeah.
And he's bigger than all these other gods, and yada, yada, yada. But he uses things from the culture that he has observed around him
yeah.
in that discussion. And he isn't allowed in that moment to get all the way to explaining Jesus, but he's setting the groundwork there for it, for that conversation. And they say, oh, we want to hear more about this.
Which maybe that's actually, I'd love to read the first three verses in chapter 17. So it says, now while Paul was waiting for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him as he saw that the city was full of idols, which I think that's actually a very interesting kind of intro and opening line. Here's verse 17. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the devout persons, and in the marketplace every day with those who happened to be there. Some of the Epicurean and Stoic philosophers, which was, I mean, a very cosmopolitan thing in Athens, to think thinks, also conversed with them. And some said, what does this babbler wish to say? Others said he seems to be a preacher of foreign divinities because he was preaching Jesus and the resurrection.
Oh, so he did. Yeah, so he did get to Jesus.
But I think it's fascinating that it says, you know, some said, what does this babbler wish to say? Or he seems to be a preacher of foreign divinities. There's a because Athens was, I mean, I guess it depends on the historical, you know, period that you're looking at, because Nero was literally lighting Christians on fire. But especially like later on during Constantine's reign, you see this kind of pluralist acceptance of everybody who is worshiping, you know, Greco-Roman deities, along with Christians and along with Jews. They're more or less tolerated together. So it's fascinating that they recognize there's this kind of ragtag group of sort of what they would have probably called neo-Jews. What is he kind of talking about? But he's at least skilled enough, Paul, to sort of go toe-to-toe with them. He's not speaking as somebody who's so outside of it that they're just kind of like, you don't seem to be an expert in anything. Why should I take you seriously? Which I think speaks to the creative energy. Because Paul being, you know, a dual citizen and being, you know, trained by the Pharisees, but also being a skilled, you know, writer.
Yeah.
I mean, that played to his energy.
Yeah, because what he starts with, the part I was thinking about, because I actually didn't have it pulled up, I probably should have, but... is when he walks around and sees all these altars to gods, different gods, and there's one labeled to the unknown god. And then he goes, I got it. That's where I can start. And so then that's where he starts. He says, guys, you have an altar to this unknown god. I can make him known to you. Let me reveal this, that he is the one who has created everything and gives life and breath. And that's his inroad to getting to Jesus, which it's such a great example for what we ought to do in the culture today. So I guess that begs the question then, I mean, most of us aren't preachers. Okay, you are, actually. but not most of the time, you know, even then. Most of us aren't preachers. Most of us aren't having debates with Epicureans.
I haven't had one lately.
Not lately, no. A lot of Platonists, actually. They just don't know it. But yeah, so like how can we use our skills, spiritual gifts, general gifts, in a way that is creative and can foster a renewal in bringing in a new kingdom?
Yeah, I think it begins by allowing yourself to see the locale that God has put you in. Because, you know, as a church, especially, you know, with some of our beliefs theologically, you know, we put a high premium on God's sovereignty and the fact that he has providentially put you and I in a workplace, in a family context, and even in this church, if you really think about it, for a time such as this. Which means it's our obligation, and not under a forced sort of way, but in loving response, it's our obligation to understand and read the topography of where we are. So whether you are a data analyst, and I think about, you know, Brian Oates, who has worked at U.S. Bank for like a couple of decades now. So Brian, if you're listening, how's it going, man? And that there's a really beautiful thing about people, especially who are a little bit older, that have had experiences working in the same workplace or maybe a couple for the long haul. And I think that speaks to a principle, which is that creativity necessarily is not just a flash in the pan. It's actually something that is to be cultivated for what Eugene Peterson calls long obedience in the same direction. So I think playing a long game and then seeing where you are and asking the Holy Spirit to give you eyes and energy to see how to employ those gifts and those things that you're naturally good at.
Yeah, that's really good. I love what you said about the long game. I don't think I used that phrase, but I was thinking it when we were talking about parenting, that you have to take the long game with kids. And it's such a reminder of how Jesus has definitely played the long game with me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and even like when we read the Bible, God has played the long game with Israel and leading up to the church. He didn't just, you know, wipe the slate clean. He operated, you know, within the structures that Israel was living in and among and against to set up his kingdom, thinking about the call of Abraham in Genesis 12. But I think that's maybe the last thing that I'll say is that reading the Bible, understanding that we worship a creative God, and the authors were creatively inspired, not just divinely inspired, but creatively inspired, that their voices, their cultural context, their unique personality, their syntax, they're all uniquely used. They're not scrubbed to kind of make it, because otherwise it almost turns into Mormonism, where it's like these golden tablets that are just kind of, you know, owned into writing. But I think that speaks to the God that we worship, because the authors were allowed to use those things to create what we now have as the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah, and here at Antioch, I hope that we are emulating that in the ways that we can by allowing people to use their gifts and abilities and, you know, letting people have their own voice.
Yeah.
Not just saying, like, well, that's not how we would say it, so, like, it's wrong. Mm. You know, when it's probably perfectly fine.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
But it's in their personality. Well, thank you for coming in. This is really good. Once again, we went way too long, but that's totally fine.
But we're extroverts, and that's just kind of how it works sometimes.
That's just how it's going to roll. Maybe we'll edit it down. But, so listeners, thank you for joining us. We will put some of these links in the show notes, like the podcast we referenced, some books we referenced, Lane's shows coming up.
Yes.
Or her residencies. Definitely go and support her. she's rocking it this year. It's pretty amazing. But until next time, have a great week, and we will continue with our creativity, or with our core value series, very, very soon. See you then.
This has been the Life in the City podcast, brought to you by Antioch Community Church in Northeast Minneapolis. Join our worship service at 10 a.m. on Sundays in the Waterbury Building, or contact us at podcast@antiochcommunity.org. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.